My name is Anthony Capozzoli. I am the host of the Dismantle Life podcast and I'm a recovering alcoholic and drug addict after nearly 40 years of addiction. I have been clean and sober for nearly 4 years and work hard to help others find recovery. Join me each episode to learn from my sober superhero guests and how they went from the darkness of addiction into the sunlight of recovery. Dismantle Life can be found on Digitent Podcasts, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just by way of introduction, for those listening, this is Claire, and I was lucky enough to be a guest on her wonderful podcast, Savage Clarity, and she's one of us. She's got a great website. You should check it out at Savage Clarity. I'm going to spell it. SavageClarity.com. All things Claire are there. YouTube, Spotify, Instagram, merch, all the good stuff. And I thought we had a great conversation on her podcast. I felt right at home. We got right into it and covered, I think, a ton of ground in a very cool way. So I'm hoping that we can, on this show today, mine, rambling around, I'm hopeful that we can maybe go back a little bit for Claire. I'd love to hear a little bit about your backstory, because I did think quite a bit. We both started pretty early. I'll let Claire tell her details, but I remembered some details from my first memorable blackout. That's going to sound weird to people that don't drink, but the first time I started drinking and I blacked out, and it was kind of the beginning of the end of the beginning.
Yeah.
for me. So maybe Claire, if you're cool, we could talk a bit about your process and how you got where you are.
Yeah. So I'll start even further back because my parents are one of us as well.
Yeah.
And I never really, my mom's on my show, so she's cool with us talking about it. And I never really thought of my mom as having an issue because she stayed home and was always, taking care of us. Yeah. But the wine at home, which. Sure. becomes an issue eventually. And then my dad was the one who would go out and, not come home in a timely fashion. So that was like the issue, because then they'd be fighting. And, he had a few DUIs and got beat up by the Boston PD at one point. And, just an Irish guy out of Boston that would, act like he was 250 pounds, but he was probably 160 pounds wet and, would get in bar fights and the whole thing. And it's an interesting topic because, I don't know if it's what the best term is for it, but, and you've talked about it a lot on your podcast, is if you have a good job or you're in school or all this stuff, you can justify the drinking. And that's what's been going on in all of my family. So when I was young, I said, I'm never going to drink alcohol because I never want to because my dad would promise to be there for things and then miss them. Like I remember a play I was in, he never showed up and I was scanning the audience the whole time and things like that. So when I was really little, I said, I'm never, ever going to drink. And then, I don't even know, it's just so funny. And then I was in sixth grade and my best friend, who is still my best friend, her mom drank a lot. So we kind of bonded on my dad and her mom. And that summer going into sixth grade, or maybe it was even in sixth grade, I don't remember, but we stole a bottle of champagne from the fridge, her parents' fridge, and drank the whole thing and both fell asleep sitting up on the couch with the lights on. And then we didn't tell anyone. We were very secretive about it. And then in eighth grade, it started popping up more and more. And, by the summer going into ninth grade, I was blacking out regularly. And I liked it. Looking back now, I think I've always loved the mornings after when we're still drunk.
Oh yeah.
When we're little, when we don't feel the pain.
Yeah.
And we're like, what happened? And
got crazy last night. Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to piece together the nights and we're laughing because we're like still giddy and we'd go get bagels and, just be gross. But Yeah, I was a blackout drinker from the beginning, and then it only got worse and worse. Yeah, and
So I was thinking a lot about it since our conversation a couple of days ago when I was on your show. I remember a few things, like blacking out was always almost, that was always the goal. It wasn't a drink. I mean, it was just drink till you black out. And at first we just started liquor cabinet robbing, right? So we grabbed whatever was available. So Rock and Rye, I remember that. I don't know if you remember that, but it was an old gross bottle. It looked like a bottle of Amaretto, but there was gross fruit in the bottle. It was like a brandy or a whiskey or something. It was disgusting. But everybody back then had it in their liquor cabinet. And it was always at the back, so no one missed it. Because it kind of fell out of favor with the drinkers, you know?
Yeah.
We would take that. We always got peach schnapps. And we used to make fuzzy navels back in the day. And we got drunk. And I don't know if it's okay if I could say her name. It probably doesn't matter too much because this is so long ago. But we were at this girl, I'll say her first name, is that, that's probably okay, Shanna. And we, her house backed up or was very close to a cemetery. I don't know why I remember this. And we got, I got so fucking drunk. I remember this was like eighth grade. I was passed out in the cemetery and talk about irony, for God's sake, like, holy shit. That God wasn't trying to tell me something. And it was like that every weekend for so long that it's funny too. I remember being left on doorsteps and never picked up from practices from my drunk dad and things.
Yeah.
So it was very, it's very common. And it's weird when, so the nature of the nurture thing, I believe it's both, you know, what you see is what you do, and there's no way to stop it. Like, if I don't drink ever in front of my kids, who fucking knows? I hope that they don't become like me. That's my goal every day, is to help my kids not be me.
Right.
I know it sounds sad, but that's my goal.
No, that's that. If I were to have kids, I would feel the same way. But, you know, it's kind of inevitable in our society to not try drinking, especially in college. Well, you know, and I think you guys talked about on your podcast, like the varsity blues, like that's what's cool,
right?
Is to get blackout drunk when your brain hasn't even finished developing. And then college, same thing. And now and then it's work hard, play hard. I feel like just now in 2023, you know, the standard path to success, it's being redefined. You know, people are realizing like the title isn't going to be what is successful. It's how you feel is successful. But I think it's not common because that there's no money in humans being spiritually fit, you know, the alcohol and the tobacco and the nicotine and everything else is pushing for addicts. And then the big pharma is pushing for us to get terminally ill. And it's just a mess, but
it is a mess. I have it's a side story from my one Boston experience. I was there for work by myself, and I wanted to go find a local in Boston, which I did. But I'm a Chicago guy, but Boston is a different animal, man. Like, I love Boston, the history. I think the city's just fantastic.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was at this little bar by myself, and it was like a local, for lack of a better term, right?
Yeah.
And the bartender was this chick. She couldn't have been more than 105 pounds. I mean, and this big belligerent guy was being an asshole. And this is back when you could still smoke in the bars and shit.
Yeah.
He was smoking. He had like an old 70s style ashtray that he had been smoking in and tapping his cigarette. But he was being a dick to the bartender for whatever reason. I swear this chick, within 2 seconds, she said, "What the fuck did you say to me?" Took the ashtray, bashed him over the head, and dragged his ass out by herself. And I'm like, this is fucking Boston, man. Damn. It's more about how tough people are in Boston, I think, than the drinking. But I couldn't believe it. She did not take any shit, not for 1 second. I wasn't even in Southie. I was just like downtown. I couldn't believe it.
It's wild. It's wild. The fights. You know, I thought seeing a fight every weekend was normal when I went to college. Because that's just, you know, that's just what happened. There was just always a fight. There was always the person that was breaking stuff and being an asshole. And, you know, and if it or it was me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was rowdy. And my town growing up, I grew up in a little bit north of 8 miles north of downtown. And yeah, it's like a breeding ground for just addicts and alcoholics. Just
yeah.
It's wild.
You get socialized into it in a lot of different ways. So, you know, the blackout thing, it was always the goal for me too. And So I don't know, like, when did you start to realize like that this is crazy? Like, there, because for me, I knew that I was on the wrong path. I was making bad choices. I took every easy path or every road I could. I didn't give a shit about anything but my buzz and staying buzzed or getting drunk, whatever the fuck it was. And I knew that like this can't last. And I don't understand how people put up with it. It's really strange. Like,
yeah.
But people just, that's how they knew me, right? So they're like, if I wasn't like that, it was weird.
Right.
So I don't know. It's hard to describe. So I kind of fell into, you know, this is 100% my problem, my fault. I own every bit of it. But I became this like, it didn't fucking matter about anything. Work events, I didn't give a fuck. I just drank my ass off all the goddamn time. There was never a moment where I'm like, I'm going to take the night off. I couldn't take it off. And then it turned into, I can't drink enough to get drunk. So I would have to pre-drink in like my hotel room or at the house or whatever it was, because it wasn't that I was ashamed of the pace or volume I was drinking at the bar. I just knew I would save about $200 if I just rampaged before I even went out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I never had an issue with, like, I could always get drunk pretty much. I mean, I'm small. And so it never really was an issue in that regard. I knew I had an issue, right? You know, I had hospital stints in high school. I got driven home by the police my very first night. I got suspended twice for showing up to dances and events wasted. So I knew I had an issue, but I just played the good girl Monday through Friday so much that I thought they would cancel each other out. Yeah. So, you know, I got into Purdue's aviation flight technology program early admission. And I remember showing up to my physics class, still drunk from the night before in high school. And my physics teacher was like, oh my God, you smell like a brewery. She was like, that's okay, my little pilot, go down and get a bagel. And like, I got like rewarded because I was going to the pilot school and she was my physics teacher. So she was pumped and I got, you know, I got really lucky. For example, I got suspended and my foreign exchange Spain trip got taken away from me, even though I had hosted several Spaniards from Madrid in my house and showed them the ultimate American experience. I got them so fucked up. They were like, you know, they're used to smoking the hashish cigarettes in their tobacco.
Sure.
So they were all wearing little weed necklaces. And I was like, okay. And we showed them how to smoke blunts and they all turned like green, but they had the best time. And so then I got suspended and it got taken away from me and I was devastated. And then sadly, the Madrid subway bombings happened. Yeah. So the whole trip was canceled. And then the following year, I got to go. And not only did I get to go, the girl who I was staying with was now a freshman at Madrid. Her mom was in the school systems at University of Madrid. So I got to stay in downtown Madrid while all my classmates were in a suburb. And we just, when I got there, they were like, you're the girl who showed everyone the best time. Mm-hmm. And I just like partied. So I kept getting like, yes, I'd have consequences, but then I'd have these like almost awards. Oh, for my partying and my like inclusiveness and, you know, just being a people person. So although I, you know, there were really dark times, you know, like I tried to commit suicide in high school because I was in such a low, scary place because of the drinking and the partying and my relationship with my family. But, you know, then I would just like live with my friends for several days at a time. And yeah. Kind of forget. Like I would just kind of go, it was just a roller coaster, up and down, up and down, up and down. And, you know, the insanely short memory that we have, you know, I would just, it would just the rinse and repeat happened early. And then once Coke came into the picture and I could be a not total blackout drinker, you know, be brought back to life and be coherent and remember the whole night most of the time.
Right.
You know, then I was like, I got this. And so that carried on. So that was the summer going into college. It wasn't very popular in Indiana. So I was blacking out a lot. And then by junior and senior year, I had it regularly. And then after that, you know, then it was just like always there. There was very rarely a night we went out without blow, unless it was like during the week, you know, when we just be like, oh, we'll have an innocent dinner, but they'd still always turn into sloppy dinners. And, you know, it was just, there was pedal to the metal. So,
I would never leave the house or go anywhere if I didn't have blow, because I knew that I would be drinking. And if I had zero drinks and would do something, I could get through that.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But I always had to have blow in my pocket. I would, like I mentioned on your show, that I would choose not to go on certain vacations or go do certain things because I'm like, I can't have blow on me. Like,
yeah.
Or I didn't have a connection in that particular city or something. It was really strange. But I had the same affliction. The reward for me was I really got along incredibly well with people. Anybody. Same. I could meet someone brand new, and within 20 minutes, we'd be best friends.
Yeah.
Drinking, ripping shots, hanging out, and having the time of our life. I always got invited to like the VIP rooms or the behind the curtain bullshit, whatever the fuck was going on. I so always somehow managed to get in there. And as a dude, it's, you know, I got treated like, because guys don't normally, unless you have the money or some kind of prestige, but I got in, I didn't have any fucking money like that. But I always still got invited to, you know, that shit somehow. And get fucking twisted up, man, and go to cocaine parties where just mountains of blow every fucking where. And they're like, have as much as you want, don't worry about it. I'm like, really? All right. it takes over fucking everything. I mean, the drinking is terrible in and of itself, but like you said, adding the cocaine was so fucking brutal. Like, I could literally drink for fucking 3 days straight.
Same.
And not miss a fucking beat.
Right.
It's
until
crazy.
Until you stop, then you're utterly useless.
Utterly useless for days.
Yeah, and the come down was just horrible. Okay. Yeah, and I did a lot of I did, like, I don't know. Were you ever into weed? Because I was always
never liked it.
See, I would get, it's so crazy to think about. I would start feeling a little shit faced. Do a line, maybe do two lines. We're all excited. We're all chatting. Then I feel too anxious because I did too much blow. So then I'd hit my weed vape pen to bring myself back down. And then after everything was over, I would take a Xanax or an Ativan or a lorazepam or whatever so that I wouldn't have an absolute anxiety panic attack meltdown. And like, that's so dangerous. Like, your heart is up, your heart is down. And, you know, and weed was always there too. So yeah, it was insanity, pure insanity.
It's utter fucking chaos. And we've been living it for so long, it becomes the norm. And then all of a sudden, you know, I just couldn't live without, I had to have all of it. I just knew every night I made up some bullshit excuse to get shit-faced. Didn't matter what it was.
And, right.
You know, everyone knows my story because this is my podcast. But, you know, after the hospital stint, that was my moment. And there have been a few like warnings along the way. I did bounce on rock bottom a couple of times. Like, it wasn't just a one-time thing. I did hit real hard quite a few times. And I fucked up so many relationships because I was such a douchebag. And unfortunately, it's, you know, like, and I feel bad. And I hope that by making amends through trying to live well but I do regret, and I do have people that say, oh, you shouldn't live your life with regrets. I struggle with that. I do have regrets, and I do feel bad about how many bridges I burned, how many people I fucked over, how many commitments that I blew off, whether they were long-term lifetime commitments or just meeting someone for dinner somewhere, whatever it was. I was notorious for all of those things. And I really was, and probably still am, a piece of shit. I'm trying not to be. I really work hard. I've been sober 5.5 years. And I still have those pangs when I think back of a person, a conversation, a relationship, whatever it would be. And not just a relationship like in the sexual term. I'm saying like just a friend relationship, any kind of relationship. I think the first thing still to this day that comes to my mind is the moment or a few times that I fucked them over, or I wasn't trustworthy, or I blew their... I blew up a responsibility to them or for them or something. And it sucks. And I carry that around as a pretty big, ugly weight. And I do try to deal with it. And I have to go, I do go to therapy to work through that. And I try to live above it by owning it though. And I still really, really, really struggle. And I
why haven't you done the steps?
So that's a really good question. I do it. My sponsor is a 12 stepper and she and I work through the steps. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to circle back around because I feel like it will help straighten the crooked line right now. Like I'm at a point now where I need a little bit. I need the focus and the process of it.
Yeah, because when you were just speaking, you know, what I think of as our step 9 promises, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, which is sounds cliche, but it's true. And of course, like, of course, I don't want to have had been date raped in my past. Of course, I don't want to have, you know, people that I screwed over. But without all those mistakes, I wouldn't be the expert on this topic that I am now able to help. You know, I'm the most qualified person when it comes to a drunk woman who has her shit together in the, you know, in the societal norms way, but is a fucking mess secretly, you know, that I can, I'm the most qualified person to help other people in that way. So no, you know, and it is the trauma and all the horrible stuff that has, you know, made me able to talk about it and help people with the same shit today. But yeah, it's definitely, I think, you know, the 12 steps and no one wants to do them.
Right.
Once you start, start seeing the change immediately. And if you're wanting to kind of like do them, you know, on your own time or with your sponsor, I highly recommend Russell Brand's recovery book because he does it. He's great. And like,
he is so good.
I printed out his thing, his 12 steps to help me with my social media addiction. But I need to work with a sponsor to do it because of course I can't hold myself accountable. I need a sponsor too. So
100%. Yeah. I'm going to give it some very serious thought. I think I'm going to pursue and do the 12 steps officially because I'm at the point where I'd like to take or break this glass ceiling I've got and get through in a good way. Things are going great. It's been 5.5 years, but I want to do better. So but
I think the 12 steps should be something that's mandatory in schools. I think every human, addiction or no addiction, should do it just to change their perspective on, you know, like just as humans, you know, our egos and practicing humility and acceptance and all of these, you know, just the concept of honesty is something that is so fucked today.
It really
like,
is.
A little white lie is not a big deal, but then that morphs into living double lives and all this, you know, insanity. And you know, I'll find myself when I'm making an excuse like for not going to a meeting, I'll like text the person I was supposed to meet, like, oh, something came up. And if it's even remotely a lie, like, oh no, I better get to that meeting.
Exactly.
Like, you know, so
I can't live with, I do, I can't allow as much as it sucks to be truthful, honest and direct in a polite way. You don't have to be mean. I will just say, this is not something I want to do. My, we mentioned on your show this weekend, literally today, all my buddies are back in school at the University of Iowa doing their thing this weekend. And I'm on the group chat. So they keep sending pictures of them doing their thing. I turned off the notifications, but
I was going to say,
I've gotten rid of that. I love them all, and I wish I would have been able to go, but I knew that it would be
too hard.
It'd be devastating for me. It'd be impossible, especially without my wife as somebody and from a support perspective there. But for you, in case people haven't listened to the show, which I do recommend, by the way, going and listening in subscribing to Claire's show. It's really good. The conversations are very authentic and real, and I do love it.
Thank you so much.
Of course, my pleasure. And your episode, your first episode, like, it shook me up. Like, there were so many moments of not just being real and authentic, but I loved how brutally honest you were. And it's great, because I think that's what it takes to do this. But for listeners that might not know you yet, what was that moment with that kind of funny? You're like, I can't fucking do this anymore.
Yeah. So I had a few. I knew from the time in high school that I would have to be abstinent from alcohol completely at some point in my life. I just thought it was going to be when I was like an old lady. Like, I thought I was going to be able to do the ebbs and flows forever. I had a really bad episode in right after college where I drunkenly drove my car and crashed it and then smashed a vase. I was staying at my parents' house, not even in my own home. I threw a vase, a beautiful vase of my mother's, through a floor to ceiling window in the middle of the winter in Maine. Oh, God. Luckily, she ducked and it didn't hit her because I threw it at her. I don't remember any of this. This is all a total blackout. And then I took it. We went to go watch the Patriots play in downtown Portland, visiting my mom in Maine and my dad. And my dad always made chili and wings every Patriots game. And so then I served after I destroyed the car, destroyed the window, I poured myself some chili. Fell down the stairs, sprayed the white walls with chili, left bone wings everywhere. And
I don't mean to laugh. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at it, but I could totally see how I could just see this progression and you're like just chaos.
It was the Tasmanian devil came home from the bars. Yeah. And I woke up in my little sister's twin bed and was like, what happened? And then I was so mortified. Oh my gosh, I wanted to die. So that was the first time I called my friend Ryan, who's on my podcast and the episode before yours. And he had been sober a few years by then and was like, I've been waiting for this call. You got to get your ass to a meeting. So I went and I thought everyone there was a freak and not for me, although it did help. Like I did feel some relief and I did go to a couple more meetings, but decided I was not one of them and I was gonna what we call white knuckle it, just chomping at the bit, be abstinent for 9 months. But then summer rolled around and that was the end of that. So that was my first attempt. I had episodes like that, like insane episodes like that, like pretty regularly. And so I knew, it was one of these times it's going to be bad because, I could have crashed my car into a tree and been dead. Instead, I crashed into a snowbank and then just, made a freaking mess. Then what really was the final straw, I went to Tulum with two of my best girlfriends from Chicago. And we went on a bender and they had enough on the last day. And I woke up and just shampoo effect just kept going. We still our the service staff would resupply our blow. Like it was crazy.
Yeah.
And I went to this beach party with my girlfriends had enough. They were sick of me. I was obnoxious. They were like, we're staying in. We really suggest you stay in too. But I was like, couldn't
Fuck
be
that. Smart. Yeah.
Yeah. Went to this beach party with randos, stayed till close. Got in a cab, only had a little bit of money, told them that, but like anticipated going to the ATM at my hotel. They slammed on the brakes. I remember my phone flying into the front seat. So he had my phone, the cabbie, and he yanked me out and he was like yelling and making a scene. I'm sure I was being rude. I don't remember enough. But then there was four cab drivers because they all line up on the streets in Tulum. And the security guard, and they had me by my arms and they dragged me to an ATM and had me take money out. And like, they were hurting me and I was terrified. I kind of sobered up enough. I gave them cash, got my phone and just took off running and ran what seemed like forever, but it was probably like 15 minutes on the beach back to my villa. busted in. I was crying. I was paranoid. I hadn't slept in days. I thought they were following me, and I scared the shit out of my girlfriends, who were sound asleep. It was 3-4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I cried all night, and then we had a flight the next day. And, you know, it was like, I could tell they were upset, but they were more worried about me. And you know, that morning, my best friend literally held me like a baby while I just cried. Cause I knew this is it. And, after a few days of my hangover, that same friend sat me down and said, you know, I can't drink with you anymore. And I could tell the look on her face, it was more painful for her than mortifying for me. And so I found an addiction specialist psychologist and figured, oh, if this guy with the PhD is going to be able to show me how to drink. And he laughed at me when I got there, like asked me the qualifying questions. He had 40 years sober. And he was like, you got to go to a meeting. He's like, we will unpack a bunch of garbage here, but you need support. You can't, it's fucking impossible to do this alone. Get your ass to a meeting. And so then I said, I'm going to do the 12 steps. And, you know, I didn't do the steps right away. You know, people like to go to meetings and stuff, but we forget that it's a 12 step program.
Yeah.
And I was just marijuana medicating and isolating and not drinking, abstinent from alcohol, but not working the steps, going to meetings daily. And it wasn't until 3 months in when I bumped into a chick that I'd worked with, and was, she had like 3 years or 5 years sober at that point. And I was like, and I could see she was doing so well, and she seemed so happy. And that's when I decided to ask someone to be my sponsor, get honest about the weed, and really, really do this thing. And then once I did it, once I started and I started to do the work, you know, step one, admitted I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. They ask you to write your story similar to how Bill Wilson does. And I start writing and I'm just writing it. And then it just, you know, it's 40 pages of nonsense. And it's like, there is no denying that I'm in the right place. And then I became addicted to sobriety.
Yep.
Oh, and never look back.
It's Well, congratulations, first of all. I love hearing that transformative moment, because I always tell, well, when people ask me, what finally did it? Some people think it's a series of all of these things, but there's, for me, it came down to that one moment being in the hospital. And when I had been so drunk and so cooked up for so fucking long, when I went 13 days, I literally, medication aside, because I had such a bad infection, I slept, and I mean fucking slept, for 13 fucking days, essentially. I did, of course, get up, walk around and eat and all those things. But I just, when I agreed in my mind that it was over and I'm going to now use all my effort to be on the other side of this, knowing that it's going to be fucking brutal.
Mm-hmm.
I was so exhausted and relieved. All my energy was gone and finally like replaced at the same time in a different way. I stopped that tension and anxiety and pressure that I would get trying to make sure I was in the right place to get blow, or I wasn't too drunk to drive to get it, or what were all those things you had to put in place to make sure that the day, the week, the night worked out the way that I needed it to.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally put that behind me, and I was fucking scared. I hadn't lived without drugs and alcohol my entire life. The last time I had, I was in eighth grade. And people are like,
I still don't know what to do with my hands when I'm
I'm the same. Like I pass and I feel bad sometimes, a lot of times for my wife, or because I can't say yes to certain things. And mm-hmm. she knows she's not mad. But I feel bad that I can't go and socialize like a normal person.
Yeah.
Whatever that means, quote unquote, but
try dating. It's even worse.
I can't. So that's gotta be tough, right?
It's so freaking tough.
Do you just open with that, or do you go on?
Yeah. So in Chicago, I couldn't even get a freaking date if I put, I don't drink on my profile. So I had to keep it off and then tell them once they asked me out, that I don't drink because there's nothing else to do in Chicago. You can't, it's cold. There's cold three quarters of the year and there's no hiking. There's no like being outside. There's no, none of that. Yeah, so the move to, the move
drink
to Southern
Burton
California
place until you can't see straight and then
yeah,
do other
exactly.
Stuff.
Yeah. And then when I date here, it's much easier. I've noticed, no doubt, people are much more health conscious. A lot. I've actually, the two, my most two recent dates, they were, one was taking a year off just to see if he could. And the other is, you know, just California sober, just doesn't drink or do drugs, but still smokes weed, which is fine. You know, anything that's harm reduction, I don't give a shit. You're not going to die. You're not going to OD and ruin your life on weed.
I heard a pretty funny comedian. It's like the worst thing that's going to happen in a pillow from somebody being high is a drive by pillow fight.
Yeah, or binge eating and
chips and stuff.
A food hangover. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's it.
I'm with it. Do what you got to do to make it work for you.
Yeah.
My approach, the do no harm, harm reduction. California, so I couldn't do that though. Because
either.
As soon as I get a whiff of, I don't give a fuck what it is, man. I'm fucked. I then will do, the dominoes will fall and I'll, same, the next time it happens, I'll be dead.
Yeah.
Like I won't be able to dust off, put it that way.
Right.
I'll go right to fucking hell. Because it's just who I am, and I'll hit it as hard as I did before, and it'll kill me.
Yep.
And that'll be it.
Yep.
And that'll be it.
Same. I'm the same. But now, I think this time around, literally right now, in this present moment, is the first time I'm actually, like, really enjoying dating, because I'm finally comfortable in my own skin.
That's great.
I can confidently say, I don't drink and it's because like there, you know, there's no, if, and I can tell right away if someone doesn't get it, you know, like if they ask us a question like, well, wouldn't it mean you beat the addiction if you could have one drink? I'm like, oh, you don't get it.
And yeah. Let's just get the tab.
Or
the check for dinner and call it a day.
And like, I had another guy be like, well, if we ever go to Dublin, like you have to have a Guinness with me. And I was like, no, bro. Like I can go to Dublin and just enjoy Dublin. I don't have to like have the one Guinness. Like it.
Yes.
And so it's been like a very good learning experience. But I do think I'll keep you posted because it's, you know, like I can tell with summertime and stuff that's going on, I'm sure. Cause when I was drinking, I would have never in a million years even thought to date someone soberly
wouldn't come up at all. Right.
That would hold up mirror
around circles though. I think it's going to work out great, first of all, but I get it. Cause like, if you don't hang around sober people, you're never going to fucking hang around sober people. Like, oh, I do. Like, it's just, it wouldn't even make sense. I get that question. Do you think I'll ever drink again? And I'm like, if I do, you'll have to come to my funeral. Like, that's my answer now.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? I'm like, no, I'm not kidding. Like, I can't fucking do that.
Yeah.
Like, and it's weird.
Yeah, no, my answer is not today. I don't know what tomorrow brings, but today not I'm not today. Drinking.
Yeah,
not today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Honest to God. So what got you started on the podcast? We didn't really talk about that too much.
So I listen to a lot of audiobooks and podcasts and, you know, I think I'm at a place where, yes, meetings are fantastic, but it's kind of, it's all this, you know, I'm never like, oh, I wish I didn't go to that meeting. I always get something out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's become kind of very rinse and repeat. And when I was getting sober in the beginning, it was quarantine. I was taking super long walks around Chicago and listening to Call Her Daddy, and they would be drinking and they were cool and pretty and blah, blah, blah. And like, I was like, where are the cool and pretty sober girls that are like, you know, more like me, not like these, you know, what they give you in the room in the program are like Joe and Charlie, who are like these old fogies that are hilarious and wonderful. And they're great, but like, they're not like me. And you know, like you, when your whole identity has been partying, it's really hard to like, find this new way of life. So I just I want to break the stigma and I want to normalize that you can still like be, you know, or not even be cool, but be awkward and uncomfortable with other people that are also awkward and uncomfortable and have just a resource to listen to. And especially for people that aren't sure if they want to start the program or aren't sure which route to take, just to give them some, you know, and 30 minutes of relief to relate.
I think it's great. I think your podcast is wonderful. And I think you're a great host because of I've listened to tons, and I'm not going to call anybody out that I don't like, because that's not cool. But what I like about your podcast is you're normally conversational. And I appreciate that, because I think that in every episode is different. And I think that you pull out really good bits of information for everybody from the conversation. And you always circle back to how it relates to you. And I think what's also cool, because I agree with you that I've heard the rooms, the word I've most often heard them described as is stodgy. And I mean that with all due respect to the rooms, but I get it, where sometimes, especially for folks that are younger, that aren't in their insert age here, I'm not going to label anything, but they need a different approach, a different way. Right. And I think the podcasts are a wonderful way to do that, especially with the video layers where people can see the people talking and stuff. This is really, really good. I don't do that on mine. Mine's strictly audio, as everyone knows. But the cool thing, I think, for today is there are so many options available if you just try. Meaning, you don't have to go to the basement of a church anymore if you don't want to. You can do this all from the comfort of your home. I do think that there's some extreme value that comes from getting out and about and doing it in the open.
Yeah.
Because the accountability piece, I think, is incredibly important, but mostly to yourself. If you commit to doing this to yourself and hold yourself accountable in the open, I think it changes things, because something happens in your brain, at least it does in mine, where I take every moment seriously. I really don't take anything for granted. I don't get cocky. At least I try not to. I have to put myself in check sometimes.
Yeah.
But I have to. I know that this could be the day that I fuck up, unless I work hard to not fuck up.
Exactly. So
and I dig it. And it's been great to get to know you. I'm super happy to have you on my show, and it was great to be on yours.
I feel like we would have been thick as thieves before.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And we definitely need to, you know, keep in touch. And you know, I would love, if you ever want to talk to any of the people from my show and vice versa, we got to help each other out. Have you ever heard of the Phoenix app?
No, I haven't.
It's a sober app for like activities in your city. Like hiking and yoga.
That's cool.
And
that's awesome. Yeah,
and beach. And, you know, I get notifications all the time and I never really open it, but I do have a friend that did like learned how to rock climb through this app. And I think it's just like donations. It's like free activities.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I love it. And just as a way to wrap, maybe you can just refresh everyone's memory on where to find you, where to listen to your podcast, where to buy your gear, a lot of cool gear.
Yes. So it's savageclarity.com, and it's spelled, clarity is spelled with an I in it, a little play on my name. There you can find all the links. I'm trying to get YouTube subscribers, because that's, you know, just where I can reach a really broad audience, but anywhere you podcast, Spotify, Apple, whatever. And then I also have a merch store. I have a cute little logo that's a beer glass holding her arms on her hips with boobs, kind of the forbidden fruit that, you know, looks very innocent and harmless, that will lead you right into hell. So definitely get some merch. It's really fun. And then I try to release my new episodes every other Sunday, because I do work full time. But eventually I hope I hope this is my thing, because a dream of mine down the road, I mentioned on my last podcast, on my podcast, I met someone in sobriety. He passed away. And he had been very active in the sober living communities. So someday I hope to be in that world. And so, you know, anywhere we can get more viewership and help in in getting to a point where we can really make a difference in communities, that would be awesome.
I love it. Well, it's been an honor to get to know you. I really enjoyed this conversation and the conversation on your podcast. It was great. And I really do hope that we can do this more often if there's new updates and things to share, because let's definitely stay in touch and keep helping each other spread the word.
Oh, I'm going to check on you and your step work.
Definitely. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been such a great way to kick off the weekend. Thanks. My last weekend of fun employment.
It's right. So Monday's the big day. Well, good luck. You're going to go. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Thank you, Anthony.
My pleasure.